Today is National Coming Out Day, a day of awareness for the LGBT community. It's something that didn't exist when longtime gay rights advocate Cleve Jones came out. Jones worked with San Francisco politician Harvey Milk before Milk was assassinated. He also came up with the idea for the AIDS quilt. Last year, Jones published the memoir When We Rise. It is now out in paperback. I spoke with Cleve Jones when the book was first published. And what an amazing journey you've had, as you tell in this book.
And I'm still standing.
You're still standing. And let's go back to the very beginning, because you were growing up in the 50s and 60s in Arizona as a gay person. It was not easy. It was not something that was widely shared at the time. And you thought about suicide for a while and then decided not to go through with it. Why? What stopped you?
Well, life back then was, you know, very different, and there was almost no information about any kind of sexuality, let alone homosexuality. But I was getting tormented a lot at school, and so when I finally understood that what this word meant, I went and looked it up in my father's library. My father was a psychologist, and, you know, quickly learned that what I was deemed mentally ill and also a criminal offense. So I was very frightened, and I think I'm of that last generation of gay people who grew up not really knowing that if there were other people like us at all. And then one afternoon, hiding out in the school library, avoiding the bullies, I happened on the 1971 Year in Review issue of Life magazine, and it had a big story about gay liberation called Homosexuals in Revolt. And that was when I first learned that not only were there lots of people like me, but there was a community and a movement, and there were photographs of all these attractive young men with long hair with their fists in the air fighting the police. And I thought, wow, I got to get out of Phoenix.
And you did. And you went to where there were more people like you.
Yeah, I hitchhiked up to San Francisco.
So how did you meet Harvey Milk?
You know, that's probably the question I am asked most frequently, and I don't remember. Harvey was a character in the neighborhood, and I definitely knew him before I went traveling in Europe and the Middle East and kept in touch. And when I got back in 77, that was when our friendship really deepened as we began to get ready to fight the Briggs Initiative, Prop 6, which would have banned gay people from working in any school district in the state. And Harvey was very much a mentor to me. He was a bit of a father figure since I was still estranged from my real father at that time. And he was one of our leaders and a very inspiring guy. He was also extremely funny. And I enjoyed his company very much and was proud that he saw value in me.
Harvey Milk, of course, was assassinated along with the mayor of San Francisco. And you came upon his body in City Hall. I just want to have you read something for us that you wrote for the one-year anniversary of the assassination of Harvey Milk. It's on page 185, if you could read this. This was a speech that you gave to people in the streets in San Francisco who had gathered.
This speech was actually given on the steps of San Francisco City Hall, overlooking Civic Center Plaza, and this is the last third of the speech. I wonder how many of you here tonight have lost a friend or loved one to suicide. Raise your candles high. How many? I wonder how many of you know a woman who has experienced the pain and terror of rape. Let me see your candles. How many? How many of you have been attacked? How many of you have been beaten by bashers or the police? How many? How many of you have heard the taunting cry from behind? Hey, faggot. Hey, dyke. How many? That is why we are here tonight. That is why we marched on Washington. That is why we will keep on marching. That is why Harvey lived. That is why Harvey died. That is why we will not rest until Harvey's dream is fulfilled, when lesbians and gay men of every age, race, and background come out to join in the struggle with all of us who seek lives of freedom and dignity and joy. It will be a long struggle. There will be decades of campaigns and leaders and no doubt many martyrs. But let no one misunderstand. Our movement is powered by the determination of a people too long denied, too long abused, a people who seek only the freedom to live, to work, and to love. Let no one misunderstand. We are deadly serious. We grow daily in power, and we will not be stopped. That is why we are here tonight.
As you read that, does it take you back to the time you read it for the first time?
Well, it certainly takes me back to that night, but it also seems to me to be something of a foreshadowing of what was to come, the reference to martyrs. When I wrote those words, I was just assuming that there would be other leaders who would be assassinated, as Harvey was, possibly even myself. But of course, I didn't know that the virus we now call HIV was already in my own bloodstream that night and in the bodies of so many of the people who were standing in Civic Center Plaza, most of whom did not survive.
Well, and in fact, you yourself came very close to not surviving. How did it happen that you turned the corner like that and got better, and you're here to talk to us today?
Well, really, I begin the book by saying that the movement saved my life, and that's not hyperbole. I was ready to kill myself when I was 15, and I read about gay liberation in Life magazine, and I flushed those pills down the toilet. And I came very close to dying, but thanks to the efforts of ACT UP and Project Inform and great heroes like Larry Kramer and Martin Delaney, I was able to access medications. I don't think I would have lived another 6 months if I hadn't gotten into that first clinical trial. So that's the point of this book, is to show that the movement saves people's lives.
Do you think that the marches and rallies and speeches are still a big part of the movement, or should be a big part of the movement? Is people like you putting to words what, you know, you feel need to be said in order to take the movement to the next level?
Well, that's a very good question, and I suppose I have a different answer for that than I would have had before this most recent election. I believe that everything we have achieved could be swept away in the blink of an eye. So this is not a time for complacency or self-congratulations. We've achieved some remarkable progress, but we need to understand that none of this is permanent. And, you know, history just gives us too many examples of people who thought they were free and woke up one morning and discovered that they were not, and discovered soon after that they were going to have to fight or die. I believe that the movement is more necessary now than ever.
And it doesn't seem like you have very much faith in the younger generation of gays and lesbians to do the kind of work that you and your peers did.
Oh, no, to the contrary. I think that young people today, the millennials, the young people coming up, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, I think are facing a lot of challenges, and I have great empathy for that and concern for them. I worry that those who have grown up under the Obama years, don't really understand how strong they're going to have to be. I believe that this election is a catastrophe, not only for LGBT people, but for the country and for the world. I do not think I will live long enough to see the damage undone. And I think that young people today need to prepare themselves for the possibility of having to cope with this and struggle against this for the rest of their lives.
How important do you think the AIDS quilt is now, so many years after you came up with the idea for it?
Well, to be honest, I think the AIDS quilt has been largely forgotten. It's been living in a warehouse in Atlanta for a long time and is rarely seen because the death rate has gone down so dramatically. And so I'm grateful for that, that the need for the quilting bees that were going on all over the country and around the world, that has diminished. But it concerns me because of this trait we have in this country of not knowing our own history. And the quilt was there at a particular moment in time when it was necessary, and it certainly did its work. I feel quite confident when I say that that quilt played a very important role in reducing the stigma associated with AIDS.
What was it like for you to go back over your entire life like this? And you talk at one point about dumping a box of photographs out. I wonder if that helped you even write this book because you could remember what happened at certain moments. But what was it like to go back over your life and relive all of these moments?
Well, that really began in 2008, working with Dustin Lance Black and Gus Van Sant on the film Milk. Dustin Lance Black came to visit me. I was living in Palm Springs at the time, where I'd gone to sort of retreat and retire and try to regroup, but I'd been sick for a very long time and I was exhausted and I was also honestly very depressed because almost everybody I loved the most had died and I missed them. And so Dustin Lance Black and Gus Van Sant required me to go through those boxes of old photographs and tell those stories. And then the film came out and suddenly all these young people wanted to hear from me. It was like being exhumed. And I decided then that I needed to go back to San Francisco, that I apparently was not going to die soon, and that if I had more time left, I should use it and I should go back to the place where I most belong and the place I love the most. So it was a process of getting, you know, re-engaged with the movement and most importantly, getting back to my roots. And my roots are on Castro Street in San Francisco, California.
Cleve Jones, whose new memoir is called When We Rise, My Life in the Movement, a great read. And thank you so much for joining us once again, Cleve Jones.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And we spoke last December. When We Rise is now out in paperback.